From Airwolf, Magnum PI, and Saint Elsewhere, Native Voices and Days of Our Lives, this is Jean Bruce Scott congratulating you on your excellent taste for choosing this station and podcast.
Jenny Finch, author, creator of The Drowners and Death of the Elver Man, and general Renaissance woman, your host for the Book of the Month.
This month's book is The Wicked Girls by Alex Marwood. The Wicked Girls is Alex Marwood's debut crime novel. Published in 2012, it is the best-selling success and established the author as a leading writer in the British noir genre. The Wicked Girls opens with the trial and sentencing of two pre-teenage girls accused of murdering Chloe, a four-year-old girl from their community. Released on parole after serving their sentences, they are placed under constant supervision and forbidden to ever have contact with one another again. The focus of the book then jumps forward in time to follow the two women, one working in a seaside amusement park and one as a freelance journalist. The town of Whitmouth, the book's setting, is the scene of a number of savage murders. Young women killed late at night whilst out enjoying themselves or on holiday. When journalist Kirsty is sent to the town to cover the story, she recognises Amber and realises they are both in danger of returning to prison. Despite her efforts, events keep pushing them together as the search for the killer moves dangerously close to home.
She's never unlearned the habit of hope, ever since she can remember. Amber has woken with the same thought. Today will be a good day. She learned the practice in her stepfather's house, clung fast to it at Blacktown, has marked her life out in small milestones of happiness. The dogs, Vic, her home and its improvements, birthday parties, small gestures of friendship, and refuses to dwell on negatives. She lies on her back, arms spread across the empty bed, and stares at the daylight leaking past the curtains onto the bedroom ceiling. Day workers are beginning to come home. She can hear engines and car doors and bellowed greetings out on Tennyson Way. The bed is hot, the room frosty. She throws off the covers and lies there, cooling off. The sun has obviously come out while she's been asleep. She's missed another summer day. But thank you for giving me summer. It's going to be okay. I can feel it in my bones. I worry too much, that's the problem. Nothing bad can happen. I've come too far. Amber gets up, takes a shower, and washes last night's work out of her hair. The water, lukewarm, wakes her up a little. She can hear faint sounds of movement downstairs. Vic is still home. Must be his day off. But she doesn't hear the sound of voices and guesses Jackie has gone out. Rubbing her hair with a towel, she checks the clock by the bed. 5 p.m. Several hours to work time. For once, it's worth putting on home clothes. She digs through the wardrobe and chooses a sundress, gaily printed with a pattern of birds and tropical foliage. Slips it over her head. Feels the pleasure of dressing pretty for once, and goes down to find her common-law husband. He's sitting at the kitchen table, all the windows and the back door thrown wide. Her bag sits before him, open. He holds something loosely in his hand. She greets him brightly. He merely looks at her, silently, in return. Amber feels the smile slip from her face. The day goes dark. "What's wrong?" she asks. He opens his hand and shows her. "So, what else have you been lying to me about?" he asks. His voice is cold, reptilian. She blanches. The other Vic is back.
Alex Marwood is the pen name for Serena Macassey, a journalist who's also written a number of romantic comedies. She changed her writing name, she maintains, as her novels were getting darker, and she realised she actually wanted to write more in the crime genre. It is not easy for a novelist to switch their work from one field to another. Witness the disdain Susan Hill encountered when moving from literary to crime fiction. Some writers make subtle changes to their names, like Ian Banks, who became Ian M. Banks when writing science fiction, whilst others adopt an entirely new identity. Marwood, in her new persona, has been very successful, winning an Edgar Allan Poe Award for The Wicked Girls in 2013 and the McCafferty Award for Best Mystery Novel in 2015 for her next book, The Killer Next Door.
Blessed loves Whitmouth and the hours around dawn, partly because it's cool and the air is clean, but mostly because dawn means that the long night's work is approaching its end, and the moment when she can lay her tired bones in her warm, soft bed for a few hours is approaching. Tonight she's scrubbed and polished every seat on the roller coaster trains, swept down what she still thinks of as its station stop, and given every touchable surface a going over with a spray bottle of antibacterial cleanser and half a dozen J-cloths. She's cleaned the Perspex windows that allow queuers to see what's going on in the rest of the park as they inch their way up the stairs. She's wiped off the hair gel and the stay-soft fro that greases every pillar at head height. Now she's in the roped-off area under the tracks, sweeping up the wrappers and coins and condoms and other small treasures that have fallen from unsuspecting pockets as the train loops the loop. It's sticky down here. Surprising numbers of people still take drinks containers on the ride, despite the warnings not to. You can always tell them later in the park, because they're the ones with a sugar dressing on their hair, and a faint look of sheepishness about them. By season's end, the area below the tracks will need to be washed down with a power hose, but there's little point in doing so before then, as generally only the cleaners come here. Blessed always saves this chore for last of all, so that she can see what's there by pale, grey daylight. It's a popular job, this. It goes to the senior cleaner and was passed down to her when Amber moved up to management, because it's amazing what people fail to notice they've lost until after they've left the park. There's usually a tenner in change down here, and sunglasses and prescription glasses and small items of jewellery, tubes of sweets and bunches of keys, which always go to lost property, and sometimes a wallet. Their owners probably think they've been pickpocketed, which is why they never return to claim them. As a Christian, Blessed used to have qualms about removing the cash before she handed the wallets in. But she knows that if she doesn't take the opportunity, Jason Murphy or one of the other guards will, and then it'll go on drink or drugs or some other form of frittering it if it's them. The proceeds of her own dishonesty go straight into Benedict's med school fund. She thinks of her victims as benefactors. Tonight has produced relatively thin pickings. Yesterday was overcast, so sunglasses, which you can sell for 50 pence a pair to the second-hand shop on 4th Street, have stayed firmly in bags, and jackets have covered the loosest pockets. But she's found £3.60 in change, almost half an hour at minimum wage after all, and three packs of chewing gum, which Ben will like, and a hairpiece, a foot-long clip-on ponytail in golden synthetic blonde. She's about to drop it in the bin liner, marvelling at its owner's obliviousness, when she thinks, no, it's in good condition. I'll see if Jackie wants it before I throw it away. We waste far too much in this world. She stretches her back and checks her watch. 5:20, nearly clocking off time. She'll stay till her contracted 5:30 before she punches her card. No one gets any prizes for doing their job efficiently at Funland. They're paid by the hour and that's that. And besides, she likes to get a lift from Amber if she can, and Amber is always the last to leave. She decides to go and look for Jackie, picks up her bin liner, and ambles in the direction of the dumpsters.
The Wicked Girls unfolds on several levels, and Marwood weaves them together with great skill. It is obvious the two adult women are the two wicked girls of the title, but their lives and experiences contain twists and surprises of their own. The mystery of the seaside murders drives much of the book, laying false trails and opening up new possibilities for the reader. But the core of the book, for me, is the story of the original crime. Ladled out in small doses, this unfolds through the novel in all its pathos and horror. Marwood's masterly handling leaves the reader both shocked and conflicted when the full picture emerges, one that challenges all our reactions to such events without excusing them in any way. This is a thought-provoking and extremely well-written novel, though not perhaps for the faint-hearted. Marwood's fictional seaside town is both familiar and bleak, and her minor characters, the friends, neighbours and work colleagues of the two women, all contribute to the grimness of the setting. The author has published two further crime novels, and if The Wicked Girls is a fair measure, they too will be worth reading.
In today's crowded world, it's sometimes hard to get heard. And sometimes you need a little extra push to be heard. That's where Manila PR can help. We specialise in online radio and press for independent bands, with prices to match, and have been doing so for the last decade. So if you have a noise to make, make it with Manila. Visit manilapr.com now.
100. Strokes affect 130,000 people in England and Wales each year. Here's a recipe that can dramatically decrease your chances of strokes.
Excellent. I better get a pen.
167 grams of calcium, 245
grams of magnesium, 1 tablespoon.
Remember, any more than 1 tablespoon could kill you. Any less than 1 tablespoon could kill you.
Right, what was
and
the recipe?
That's the recipe.
Oh,
if
damn.
You would like a more simple solution, you can always call Pharma Nord on 01670 519989.
All right.
Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
Let me see if I can jot that down. What was the number again?
01670 519989. Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
And how do you spell Pharma Nord, I wonder?
pharmanord.co.uk.
It's almost as if I'm having a conversation with the radio.
Don't be silly, that's impossible.
Pharma Nord, winning the war of nutrition.
You're listening to a Southside Broadcasting podcast. Southside Broadcasting is a media company which aims to provide a wide range of features from the rural, health and lifestyle worlds. You can regularly listen to entertaining podcasts with interviews and correspondence from Los Angeles, Nashville, New York and London. You can take part in our Book of the Month features, grab some great nutritional advice, enjoy broadcasts from the Great Yorkshire Show, the Lincolnshire Show, and enjoy local football reviews with our regular feature, Fly Me to the Moon. You can even hear a BAFTA award-winning director drive a train full of teddy bears. You can listen to these and many more podcasts at southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. For further information on how you can join over 35,000 people who regularly download our podcasts, call us on 01642 854 742 or email info@southsidebroadcasting.com now.
Being selected by Jenny Finch and her team for the Book of the Month is quite frankly one of the pinnacles of any writer's ambition. Don't ask me how I know this. I just do.
So, Rob Nichols with us in the studio. The Wicked Girls by Alex Marwood. Not a comment on Theresa May and Amber Rudd. Just a thought there. Sorry, that's the only political point I've
made
in any way, shape or form. But your thoughts...
A very uncomfortable read, and yet a gripping read in which there are no... In the end, are there any characters that you would want to relate to, and those characters that you do have some sort of sympathy for, you maybe don't like the fact that you've got all those sort of conflicts going on, and as Jenny says, the way that through the book... You have the little inserts of the flashbacks to the original incidents, and you're sort of hoping against hope that they are not as guilty as they appear to be at the start. You know that, and that because of that, you sort of keep having your sympathy with the characters in the present, because you're hoping that it's It's a mistake.
Well, certainly when it comes to the description of mob rule and mob behaviour and so on, I thought it was regrettably true to so much of the negative side of the human condition. Even the one soul who I kind of had some sympathy with, the character of Blessed, who had benefits, seemed to be friendly and amenable, even she turns her back in the end on the situation. And if we go back and we dial back to the original crime that the two characters actually committed, well, we say crime committed, was it not simply a case of a classic case of misfortune and unfortunate? I thought the description there very much opened up the debate in terms of, you know, you have two children who have a child unwittingly placed in their care, and it's not clearly that there are references to be made to the tragedy of the Bulger situation, and clearly there,
which are referred to in the book. Exactly. There's an awful lot of
so it's
actual.
It's made quite explicit in terms of what we're seeing and what this is meant to be. Although there's no mention of the two girls actually having seen Child's Play or a video to actually have triggered off their reaction, which was a big thing at the time, as I recall. I mean, one of the things which, for me, I thought was interesting was the switch around in terms of the asymmetry of their subsequent paths, the fact that the one who's clearly the more working-class soul becomes the middle-class, well-articulated soul, and the one who effectively came from what we define as a privileged background, with obviously challenges, she becomes the fun fair host and or the fun fair worker and the cleaner and the line from that. I didn't think that was, I mean, I wouldn't say it was telegraphed, but I kind of pretty much sussed that that was the way things were going. I don't know, Rob, if that caught you by surprise at all in terms of that sort of line about the that sort of things or...
Well, yeah, it did. It did surprise me, and I thought it was really good, but obviously with hindsight, I should have sort of said, oh no! But I thought that was quite, it was very good for the story, wasn't it? That with that twist and the twist from the start, but by the treatment of the two girls, and an awful lot of things about the book ring true. And I suppose if you your own sympathies, how would you talk about Blessed, but how would you react yourself? You may not form a lynch mob, but we saw those sort of lynch mobs with them. Was the famous case, was it a paediatrician that was and that was on the south coast, wasn't it?
The days of Sarah's Law and the whole of campaigning and setting people up for that. Certainly, you said about being an uncomfortable read, and you mentioned the lynch mob. Again, the two canines, which I know Jenny doesn't want to talk about, but we'll step away from that. That, again, you're sort of left with this, why? What would possess people to actually do that? Because when clearly one tries to identify with these individuals or steps away, that's something where you think, well, surely that's just a step too far, you know, for any sort of sense of that perspective.
Yeah, but when people get caught up in... At times when people get caught up and gripped in something, then you... There doesn't seem to be any reason, does there? People, well, even just acts of you see at the moment acts of like mindless graffiti, and people say that words don't have effect, but they do, and words quickly turn into actions.
Jenny, I'm returning to yourself. Actually, in fact, arguably, we've all done journalistic bits and pieces here, and we all can probably recognise the elements of the tabloid press and the hound dogs, and maybe, actually, there are less situations where journalists have liquid lunches that are actually being maintained, taking place here, but you know, certainly that's a classic way. Did you feel that Marwood effectively captured the world of journalism and stringers and people working for the Nationals?
I think she did, yes. It's beginning to change from that now, I think. I think the scramble for work is such that the liquid lunch really...
The days of Geoffrey Barnard being unwell.
Yes,
long
definitely.
Gone.
But I think that desperate seeking for a story and that pushing it just a tiny bit further so yours catches the eye. And the mob outside with that question, how do you feel, rings very true. Very much indeed. Mm. And it does still go on, unfortunately, and I think we've seen an awful lot of something similar in the last few weeks.
You identified Serena Mackesy as the original name of Alex Marwood. Interesting that she's writing about journalists who effectively have an alter ego, and yet she's employing an alter ego herself. I mean, I think that's almost a metafiction element. I mean,
you write about what you know, Alex.
It's true. I'm just a little interested in terms of the side of things. But going back to identity, that's a lot of things. We're talking about that very much here. We've got two girls. We've got alternate ways of working through that. You've got different activities. She uses binary oppositions quite a lot throughout the whole text to really address and bring to the fore the kind of contrasts. You know, it's a world of contrasts. It's the seaside versus suburbia. It's the elements of good versus evil. It's the sort of the, and the character, I mean, let's look at some of the male characters. Vic, the common law husband of Amber. We're kind of led to believe he was the murderer.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, the other sort of pointer is clearly to the there is another murderer that's actually in there, of course, who murders the prostitute and the nasty chap at the end who effectively gets his comeuppance. And again, you know, you've got another sort of aspect there in terms of where things are developing as well. Rob, how did you feel the sort of the murderer's description? Had you identified it? Because that sort of threw me to a certain extent. Mm. I could understand him having issues and working through that, but the description that we had of very much a kind of romantic Lothario, easygoing, fairground soul, etc., didn't quite chime with me with actually being a cold-blooded killer.
No, but he, like so many of the characters, was hiding behind a front, wasn't he? Mm. I think that was the point that one point of the book, wasn't it, that so many people had other sides to them, and that could be like other sides to people going to the press and turning on friends or behaving in different ways. But yeah, absolutely.
Nobody really comes out of this with any real credit, I suppose.
No,
apart from Jim.
Apart from, yes, yeah.
Kirsty's husband. Yeah. Thoroughly decent bloke all the way through. Boring as hell, but thoroughly decent.
Although you could say that his reaction at the dinner party was not great, and clearly he lost his job, so he was tense about that. and we never know whether he actually got a job to.
No. On a scale of one to Vic, he comes out very well in this.
that is true. Other than that, again, I think it was uncomfortable. It was difficult to actually see that, and maybe it was because we seemed to be almost submerged with the kind of broad church child abuse syndromes coming through, that I thought this is, you know, part of me was saying, oh, not again. Mm-hmm. And also, one ultimately, I feel, is left with huge sympathy for both Amber and the other.
Kirsty,
exactly, because actually, you know, that when the description comes through of what happened to Chloe, that actually, you know, that sort of thing, it was an accident.
Yeah,
yes,
you know, it wasn't a deliberate attempt to effectively do somebody in, and I think, you know, from that sort of basis alone, I thought it was a sort of a regrettable sort of ending. I mean, presumably that sort of description of the seas, the cinematic description of the sea washing in and the last cigarette before 999 is actually dialed, you know, the one in a sense aspect that Amber takes to effectively demonstrate that life can go on.
Mm.
Presumably, again, it'd be up for a TV movie or series or some way, shape, or
form. It has been optioned, apparently.
I would have thought so, yes. I could sit, and again, I'm not sure whether... Do we need another one of the genre? Which is why... Well, I won't give my score yet. Rob, what was your score for The Wicked Girls?
I'd go for 8.5.
Right. I'm going to go 7. Primarily because I felt, actually, again, it needed a little bit more light, perhaps. And the killing of the dogs, unfortunately, lost a good 0.5 for me. But
sorry, I shouldn't have.
Yeah, 8, because, yeah.
So what do we do next, then, as we're into the summer season, and if people are sort of thinking that's far too bleak, and interestingly enough, Whitmouth, you could actually see it as elements of Redcar or Saltburn, or maybe Whitby crossed with Yarmouth in terms of...
Or Clacton.
Or Clacton, of course. I won't say Skegness, because that's a different line entirely. What do we do next, Jenny?
I think we need a bit of subversive humour, and so I'm going for the glorious and hilarious The Loved One by Evelyn Waugh.
You're listening to Jenny Finch, crime writer, scholar, and commentator, with another classic Book of the Month on Southside Broadcasting.